Can everybody hear me okay? It is 1:15 according to my clock here, so I'm gonna go ahead and get started. That sound good? Welcome everybody. I hope you're not suffering from a massive food coma and you're actually able to pay attention to the talk. I'm sorry. My name is Argenis Fernandez. I am a senior database monkey for SurveyMonkey. We don't really have titles, so we just call ourselves monkeys. It's actually quite fun. It's a very dynamic environment to work for. I do have quite an accent, so if you have any issues understanding what I'm saying, please raise your hands. Let me know. Just say, Argenis, I really have no idea what you're saying because you're not saying it right, and I will try to correct myself. Right? So this is Lean and Mean running Microsoft SQL Server on Windows Server Core. And before we get started, I actually want to ask you guys, how many of you are actually running Server Core in your environments? Okay, raise your hands. That's about, wow, that's more than I actually expected. So that's about 6 hands out of, 20 plus people that we have here? So that's a lot. I expected a little less. I'll tell you, before I went to work for SurveyMonkey, I was actually a senior consultant with Microsoft Consulting Services. And during my time as a consultant, I saw zero companies adopt Server Core. And that's seriously concerning. It was seriously concerning to me. Who here doesn't know what Server Core is? Never heard of Server Core before. Okay, so very quickly, I want to tell you what it is. It is a sort of stripped down version of Windows, but it's not really stripped out of basic functionality. It is a full-blown OS. It just doesn't have the GUI component to it. So you don't have a graphical interface. Well, there's some gotchas in there, and we'll mention those during the talk. But essentially, that's what it is. It's a stripped out version of Windows that doesn't have any graphical components. Right? That's what Server Core is. And as I was saying before, I have seen very little adoption of Server Core out there in the field. And it's actually concerning, because I believe the Server Core is something that should be your mandate in all your environments. It should be your policy. You should be running Server Core whenever possible. We'll talk about that a little bit further on the presentation. I'll dig into that point. This is what we're gonna cover today. We're gonna talk about the different Windows Server topologies and where Server Core makes sense. Why would you want to use Server Core? So I'll give you a few reasons for using it. The SQL Server support for Server Core, we'll talk about the different components of SQL Server that are supported on the Server Core and those who are not. We'll talk about an alternative to Server Core called MintShell. We'll mention that, we'll demo it, so we'll see it live. We'll also talk about SQL setup and how you actually install SQL Server on a Server Core installation of Windows. There's gonna be plenty of things that you should know, little tips here and there, little gotchas, things that you need to be aware of when running a Server Core. And then we'll do hopefully a whole bunch of demos. Now the demos, before we actually get starting on them, I wanna warn you, I'm not gonna run a whole lot of scripts. And I think that's a good thing. Because the message that you want to take back to your system administrators is that they should not fear Server Core. And if you are IT administrators today, who of you guys are IT pros, system administrators, DBAs? Okay. Those of you who are DBAs, you should be talking to your system administrators about running Server Core in your environments. Hopefully, after this talk, you will have enough munition to go talk to them about it and present it to them in a nice way. All right. So let's talk a little bit about Windows Server topologies. SQL Server is an app, just like the apps that you're running on your phone. It's just a very power-hungry app. It requires a ton of resources, just tons. It needs a lot of memory. It wants all the memory you can give it. It needs a lot of disk, and fast disk, loves fast disk. And it also requires a whole ton of CPU. So if we start taking resources away from SQL Server on any given server because we're installing things like the Windows GUI, then essentially what we're doing is stripping resources away from SQL. Truly, that's what happens. So we end up adding more and more things to our servers to make them work or make them functional or adhere to our policies or what have you. And in the end, what we're doing is that we're taking resources away from SQL Server. I'll give you a classic example, antivirus. I'm not a fan of having antiviruses on the server. Now, those of you who know me from before or have heard of me before will recall that I'm a very security conscious person. But I believe in securing the perimeter and securing access to the server and not really securing the server per se, because once you have actually gained access to the server, you can do anything you want. Right. So now, do I still recommend that you run entire malware on your servers? Yes, I do. But it's something that takes away resources from SQL Server. We also do a whole bunch of agents. There's agents that we put on our servers for compliance, for backups, and whatever else. I have seen servers running with 6 or 7 different agents at any given point. All of those agents are taking resources away from SQL Server. Do you expect SQL Server to perform the same way as it would on a server that otherwise didn't have those agents running on it? No, right? This is the other thing that I see that's very concerning. We have IE running on our boxes. I have actually caught system administrators browsing the internet from a production server. Why? Why do we do that? Because it's convenient at times? Yeah, I mean, guilty as charged. I have downloaded service packs and CUs from production servers. No, I shouldn't do it, but I have done it in the past. Now, if we strip IE, which you can actually do on your servers today, you can remove IE from your servers, you can actually remove that enticement of logging into the server and do something directly there. So that you will be sort of forcing yourself to do things the right way. So I see that as a benefit. The fact that now we have things like IE on production servers has led to the fact that now we need an antivirus and all these things on the servers, is what I mentioned before. Different agents for compliance, so you don't do things that you shouldn't be doing on your servers. Okay? We'll dig into that point a little bit further. About the topology in particular, one thing that I want to stress from this presentation is there's one thing that you have to take away. So not only the server core is super cool and SQL Server can run super fast on it, it's the optimal way to run it, but that you should be running single purpose servers in your topology. That means that you shouldn't be running SQL Server, analysis services, integration services, reporting services, all on the same box. When you do that, you're having competing applications taking resources from each other, especially when you're running things like analysis services and the database engine all on the same box. Analysis services is a CPU-hungry application. And SSIS, it can be a serious network hog and also a CPU hog. So do you want those applications to be competing with SQL Server on your same box? Probably not a good idea. It might actually work in your benefit to virtualize the host. So if you must have on one physical box, you have to run all the components of the SQL Server stack on one server, I'd rather virtualize that server, make it a Hyper-V box, or your preferred virtualization hypervisor, and just run the different services on different VMs. Now, granted, there's licensing issues and costs added to that. I totally understand. Well, my recommendation is that you always run single-purpose servers in your environment. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. Now, this is a story, right? My aunt called me. I think I have issues with my computer. It's kind of slow. So I get there, and she shows me this. And the analogy is stuck in my head, right? When I log onto servers and I look at the system tray and there's like 15 different things running on there, it scares me. That server is not performing as fast as it should, right? So this is the point that I want to drive across. Should a production server look like this? How about this? Is that better? Is that scary? Raise your hands if you feel this is scary. It is scary to me. It's okay, yes. It is scary. Why? Command line. We're not that comfortable with command line, are we? I know I'm not. I don't remember every single command out there. Everybody bings it with their favorite search engine. Figure out what the commands are. You have some handy reference to go back to. Scripting is crucial when it comes to command line, but the point that I want to make here is that you actually don't need to see this. You don't. Server core is a server that is going to be running behind the scenes. You just leave it. Don't touch it. You set it up once, and you administer it remotely. During the demo part of the presentation, we'll highlight the different ways that you can access a server core box to minimize the amount of scripting that you have to do against it. The basic things that you will have to do on a box like this, that looks like this, are things like setting up the IP address, setting up DNS. And for that, there's actually a very handy utility that I'll show you that allows you to do all that, no scripting needed. So the basic things to set up connectivity for the box, you can do very easily. And then from there, you just remote in and do whatever else using your favorite GUI administration tools. We're going to demo all of that. So does everybody agree with me now that this is a good idea, that the production servers should look this way? Yeah? So let's talk a little bit about the benefits of having server core. The most obvious benefits, right? Smaller footprint on disk. About 84% reduction on bits sitting on your disk. I think that's big. Why is that big? Because you don't have to provision huge VMs. Your virtual machines reduce space. You can cram more, make better use of your resources, right? And these numbers, by the way, were gathered by a SQL Server MVP named Alan Hurd, who delivered a presentation at TechEd 2012, which I'll refer to on the resources slide, and I'll give you a URL for it. He goes in depth and will show you every single script that you will possibly want to hear about for dealing with server core. I am not going to do that. I mean, I'm trying to sell you server core in a different way. I'm trying to tell you, you don't need all of those scripts. You can do pretty much everything remotely. So we keep going. Less patches needed. When Alan did his study on a brand new server core VM versus a full GUI VM, he noticed that it was about 45% less patches. I think that's huge, right? Patch Tuesday, it's not a pain anymore. Well, not such a pain, right? Downtime is minimized because you don't have to apply as many patches. Isn't that a great thing? I think it makes perfect sense. This thing also boots faster because you don't have as many components to load when the computer is booting up. So you're making a more efficient use of your resources. Server is just faster. You have less downtime because it boots faster. Now, this is one of my favorite benefits of using Server Core, the reduced surface area. What that means is that you're not exposing too many things to your network. You're not exposing as many entry points to your server using Server Core. And one of the most important things is that somebody logs onto your server and sees that black screen with a command line, they probably not want to mess with it too much. So if you have folks in your environment that are less than qualified to do things, when they log onto Server Core, they probably not want to mess with the server too much. I think that's actually a really good side effect of having Server Core. So better security because of the reduced surface area. Maybe better performance. Why do I say maybe? Because when everything is said and done, you boot up a full GUI instance versus a Server Core instance. Essentially what happens is that all the services and resources that were not needed, they go idle, right? So they're not consuming resources on your box anymore. So when everything's said and done after boot time, the servers pretty much perform the same way. Now, will full GUI take more resources than Server Core? Absolutely. Just look at the memory consumption of Explorer.exe. Just log onto your box, RDP to your server, look at the memory consumption of Explorer.exe. It's gigantic. Now, here's the other thing. I'm probably not popular because of this statement. What is the Metro interface doing on the server? I personally don't see any benefits from having the Metro interface on any server. TCO. We can definitely talk about the total cost of ownership of running Server Core. It's a lot less than running full GUI. You would actually be forced to do things in an automated way. You will figure out a way to group things together so you don't have to do things individually on each server. You will force yourself to learn things like PowerShell, to roll out patches and things like that. You will automate a lot of processes. And that's actually a segue into my next slide. Server Core forces you out of your comfort zone. When you start dealing with things that you are not quite comfortable with, then you get better. You might not see that as a benefit, but I actually do. When I'm shown something that I'm not really quite comfortable with, I'm learning at that point. You guys want to do the same thing. You want to learn how to manage Server Core properly, how to make your life easier by automating processes. This is a good thing. So think scripting, what I've been saying. Think scripting, think automation, think PowerShell. PowerShell is now ubiquitous. Everybody should be using it, or at least considering to learn how to use it. Server Core has, SQL Server has wide support for SQL Server, for PowerShell commandlets. Tons of support for it. Setup takes a lot less time. On a slow VM, about 20 minutes. That's a slow VM. I run it on my, on this laptop. It's not so powerful. It's about two, three-year-old laptop. And it ran about 8 minutes, 10 minutes. That's pretty fast, right? So now the excuse that you get from your system administrator is that SQL Server setup just takes forever and they take a month to deliver an instance that you asked for. It's no longer there. And once you actually go through the process of automating the builds of SQL Server for your environment, then you're in even better shape. And I will show you guys how to do that. Any questions so far? Good. This is another benefit. You probably will not consider RDPing into the box. You, yourself, the IT Pro DBA, you will not want to RDP into the server. Why would you? You don't need to do it anymore. Recommendation, get a VM on every data center that you manage or every environment that you manage and have that server be your central management server for that particular data center. And then install all the administration tools in that box. Anything you need, Management Studio, the remote Windows administration tools, anything you need, set it up on that one box. Everything else should be running Server Core. Unless, of course, you're using some part of the SQL Server stack that does not support Server Core. But I think the central management servers, that's what I call them, make a lot of sense. Central administration servers on each data center. So consider doing that. You will then RDP into that box, into the central administration box, and from there you will remote in and administer all your boxes. That makes sense? Better approach, right? So this is actually something that Microsoft is driving constantly. See, Server Core is actually the default installation. So you, system administrators, you're actually pressing the key down to switch to full GUI. Microsoft is actually suggesting that you go Server Core over full GUI when you set up Windows the first time. This is a screenshot from Windows setup, so you can see that. Don't you think we should follow Microsoft's advice in this regard? I believe we should. If we're not ready to jump 100% to Server Core, because of fear, usually is the biggest reason why you wouldn't want to go. There is an alternative to Server Core. Windows has actually three deployment or setup methods or states. You can have a Server Core instance, which is what you saw before. You can have a Server Core instance on Minshell. It's actually not called Server Core, it's called Minshell. And Minshell looks a lot like Server Core, but you can still run GUI administration tools. So it's got all the benefits that we talked about from Server Core. You know, reduced surface area, less patches. A lot less patches still, even though you run GUI administration tools. But you're having just the majority of the benefits of Server Core are still there. Like I said, you can run your GUI administration tools. You have no desktop-like UI, meaning you do not run the Metro interface on Windows Server 2012. And if you're running Windows Server 2008 R2 Server Core, you do not get start menu either. Okay? You can still run GUI tools, and we'll demo that. And you can, this is actually very interesting. You can switch back and forth between full GUI and Server Core and Minshell. So you can go Server Core, Minshell, full GUI. And you can do all that through scripts. You can actually do it on a graphical interface as well. So you can remote manage a server and just remove features. And that will bring them from Server Core to Minshell to full GUI. It's up to you how you wanna set up your service. I recommend that you go Server Core or Minshell, whenever possible. Don't go full GUI. Just go full GUI for the service that actually need that. Here's the caveat though. Once you install SQL Server, you cannot switch modes. You have to stay there. Can anybody tell me why that is? Anybody? It's essentially prerequisites, right? So when you set up, in full GUI, for example, if we set up SQL Server in full GUI, we cannot switch to Minshell because some things that we set up in GUI might not be supported on Minshell. It's all about requisites. So that's the only caveat there. Any questions about that? This is actually very clever. The Windows development team purportedly did this. When you are logging into a server core box, you're going to see a blue screen. When you log on to a full GUI instance of Windows, you're going to see a gray screen. This is actually gray. It looks kind of blackish right now. That's actually green. The other thing that tells it away, the date. So when you log onto a server, you automatically know. So if you get, if I get the blue screen, oh, no, I don't want to deal with this server. I'll just remote in from somewhere else. That make sense? That's sort of like a warning sign. Don't log onto this box. Just manage it remotely. Right. This is, yeah, you guys want to read all that. SQL Server support for Server Core. We obviously have to go through all this. OS, first of all, Windows Server 2008 R2, SP1, very important. Or Windows Server 2012. You cannot install, and this is actually something that might hurt some of you guys, but I feel pain for you if you're still running SQL Server 32-bit. You cannot install 32-bit instances of SQL. There's no WoW 64 or Windows on Windows 64 support for it. All the non-GUI-based features of SQL Server are supported. So if you start thinking about the features that do not require any GUI whatsoever, the first thing that comes to mind, database engine, right? What's the other thing that doesn't require a GUI to run? Analysis services. What's another thing that doesn't require a GUI to run? SSIS, integration services, right? So tons of things are actually supported. So rather than telling you all the things that are supported, I will tell you what is not supported. And the list is right there. You can read it yourselves. SSRS, reporting services. Anybody tell me why it's not supported on Server Core? Yes. The configuration management is a graphical tool. That's, it's more because of the configuration manager rather than a SSDT, SQL Server Data Tools, which is used for development of SSIS packages and development of SQL Server projects in general. Why would you want that on your production server anyway? Right? It doesn't make much sense to me. So it's good that it's not supported on Server Core. Client tools, backward compatibility, it's got some GUI components are not supported. Client tools, SDK, also, these are things that you probably shouldn't have on your production server anyway. Books online, now deceased and called SQL Server documentation, it is not supported. Distributed replay controller, all GUI based, 100% GUI based. Unfortunately, there's no PowerShell support for it yet, might be in the future. MDS or master data services, it's not supported either. Data quality services, also not supported. The reasons for that, the reasons are the same for those two, right? They got GUI components, you cannot leverage on Server Core. So SQL setup, there's actually multiple ways to skin that cat. How do you install a SQL Server instance on Server Core? Multiple ways. The first way will be quick and easy way. Run the wizard on a server, on a full GUI server. Go through all the sets of windows and fill out all the information for that instance that you're trying to set up. And before you actually click on finish or go, you have an option to save the configuration file. Take that configuration file, modify it as you need it, and then take it and apply it to all your server core boxes to install SQL Server that way. That's fairly easy to do. It doesn't really take a whole lot of work. You just have to be careful on which options you select, and then open up the configuration file and modify it to your needs for your other servers. My recommendation is that you get multiple configuration files for each environment that you manage. So if you have dev environments, for example, you might be using certain settings for your development servers. Same thing for a test or QA environment, and a different configuration file for production. I think that makes the most sense. Now, you can have as many configuration files as you wish. A hint or a good tip for this is version control them. If you have version control in your environments, your developers are using that, if you can leverage that facility of version control, then go ahead and put your configuration files in there. It's a good idea. You know, if you make changes, you can go back and figure out what you change that doesn't work. All right? Any questions about that? Fairly straightforward, right? More advanced ways. The other ways that we can set up SQL Server on Windows Server Core. Command line. we can actually type a huge command line with all the parameters required to install SQL Server. Every single one of them has to be well, not all of them has to be specified, but it becomes rather lengthy. As a matter of fact, I'm gonna go over a sample command line installation. And the configuration file that I just mentioned. You know, if you didn't save it, you can write one from scratch. Now, why would you wanna do that? I don't know. I did that, and I didn't have such a pleasant experience. It took me a while. I had to constantly refer to the SQL Server documentation and look up every single parameter and understand what it meant. So I wouldn't recommend that you go this way the first time out. First time, just run your wizard, save your configuration file, take it from there. Right? If you wanna sort of mess with things on your own, then go for the configuration file from scratch, but that's sort of a lengthy method. So let's look at a command line setup example. And this is probably the best slide of all the presentation. Here we go. That's it. It's huge. This is an example invocation of SQL Server setup. So let's kind of break this down, right? Setup.exe, obviously, we're assuming that the SQL Server binaries are on the D drive for this particular invocation. Action equals install. Now, action means what you actually intend to do. If you want to install a new instance of SQL Server, you will use install. If you were adding a new node to a SQL Server cluster, then you would choose a different action. I'm not going to go through every possible value for all of these different parameters, because we could probably spend a couple of days talking about all these. So we're not going to do that here today. And rather than doing that, we're assuming a very simple installation that only has two components, SQL Server database engine, and replication, which has by requisite the SQL Server engine. So the second parameter that we want to look at here is error reporting. This is error reporting for your corporate error servers. You might have that set up in your environments, you might not. If you do not have corporate error servers, guess what that information is where I want to go? Directly to Microsoft's error reporting servers. Do you want your servers connected to the internet and uploading information to the internet without you knowing so? No, I wouldn't like that. So I recommend that you do not use error reporting, and I'm not very popular with the SQL Server development team because I suggest that you turn this off. They actually want that feedback, right? They want to know about the different errors that you guys are getting. So if you could turn this on your development environments, probably a good idea. On your test environments, maybe, maybe not. So it's really up to you. My general recommendation is that your production service should have no access to the internet whatsoever, not on your SQL servers anyway. Does that make sense? I think it does. Let's keep going. So here are the features that we're installing are two, SQL Server Engine and replication, as I mentioned before. You have to delimit all the different features that you'd like to install. So that can get pretty lengthy. Like I said before, it's probably a good idea that you run through the wizard and save the configuration file with a whole bunch of options, and you select from there. Update enabled equals zero. In this case, I am saying update enabled equals zero. Does anybody know what smart setup is? Smart setup, anybody? One person. All right. Smart setup is a new feature in SQL Server 2012 that allows you to, on the fly, apply new bits to your SQL Server installation. So if you have service packs or cumulative updates that you would like to apply on top of your SQL Server setup, you can leverage this new feature. You can actually see this feature in action when you install SQL Server 2012, and as you go through the setup windows, it gets to a window where it says, do you have updates, or these updates are available for your installation, would you like to apply them? Right. So it's the same concept, just translated into a command line. My recommendation to you folks is, get the bits for the service packs. You know, service pack for SQL Server 2012, service pack one is out, and several cumulative updates have been out for that service pack as well. You wanna get all those bits and put them somewhere in your network. Your software share or whatever you call it, your bits share. Place them there and then point your setup towards those. So that way, when you set up your instance, it already has the latest bits. I think that's a smart move, a nice way to set up your SQL servers. You know, they're patched from the get-go. It's a good idea. So here, for this particular example, I did not enable update, but I could have. If I said update enable equals 1, then there's one more parameter that I have to specify. Guess what that is? The location of the bits. So you say update enable equals 1, then you have to specify where the other bits are. All right? Now, instance name, and this is something that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. If you want to set up a default instance of SQL Server, meaning not a named instance, you have to specify a name for it, MS SQL Server. Does that make any sense? I just want a default instance. I don't want an instance name. Yet you have to name it MS SQL Server, which means that you cannot have an instance that's actually called MS SQL Server on any of your boxes. So again, if you want to set up a default instance, no name, not a named instance, SQL Server, you have to specify instance name equals MS SQL Server. Agent service account. Here, I picked NT Authority Network Service, just for the sake of the example. That's a SQL Server agent service account, okay? Next up, SQL service account. So that will be the service account under which the database engine is running. MT Authority Network Service as well for the purposes of this example. SQL sysadmin accounts. Why is this important? This is a mandatory parameter. Why do you have to specify that? Anybody? Pardon me? In case SSH is disabled. Well, so yeah, if you don't set up, if you specify SQL security mode equals SQL down here, then you have to specify an SSH password, right? So if say disable, you mean that you're going Windows authentication? Yes, if you go Windows authentication, you have to specify somebody or preferably a group, an NT group or an AD group that would actually be comprised of those folks that have that should have an admin access to that instance of SQL Server. Starting with SQL Server 2008, the local administrators are not part of the system sysadmin server role, meaning they do not have admin privileges on SQL Server. That started with, SQL Server 2008. So you must specify at least one login, one valid login for this. If the login's not properly specified, then you're not gonna, it's not gonna install. Install is gonna break, right? So make sure that you specify a valid login or a valid group here, okay? Moving forward. Slash Q, which means do the installation completely quietly. No messages are going to be provided to the window. There are alternatives. There's a slash QS that would actually show the progress bar. However you want to trust that progress bar as an indicator of actual progress, up to you. Moving forward, SQM reporting, that is SQL quality metrics reporting. That is essentially more telemetry data that is sent to Microsoft. I personally don't like that on production servers for the same reason that I do not like error reporting equals one enabled on my production servers and sending data to Microsoft. So I'd like that to be zero on my production servers. Up to you whether you want to enable that on your development test servers as well. Moving forward, see browser service startup type. Who here knows what the SQL Server browser service is? I feel it's necessary to talk a little bit about the SQL Server browser service. By default, when you have a default instance of SQL Server running on port 1433, there is nothing that a client has to do to communicate to that instance. Right? It just talks to that instance directly. Apologies for that. It talks directly to that instance on port 1433. There is no additional negotiation that needs to take place for that client to communicate on a different port because that instance is running by default on port 1433. Now, if you have a named instance, when you set up that named instance, by default, that instance will have a dynamic TCP port that it's going to be running under. Now, I actually, we can talk offline about this a little bit more, but I actually recommend that you do not run on dynamic ports, that you run every single instance on port 1433. Can you do that? Can you run multiple instances of port 1433? Yes? No? Why not? You can. The way to do it is to have multiple addresses, one per each instance. And that actually will minimize the amount of administration that you have to do on your networks, because now you don't have to specify all these different dynamic ports on your firewalls, et cetera. Makes your administration a whole lot easier. So going back to the browser service, when a client wants to communicate with an instance of SQL Server that by default runs on a dynamic TCP port, it could be port 50.123, the client first talks to the SQL Server browser service on your server on UDP port 1434. Right? So that is a query that is made. It's sort of like RPC, It works kind of that way. It queries the SQL Server browser service, and then the browser service replies back with the actual port that it needs to communicate to. And then the client actually establishes a connection, which is an additional round trip, which, if you're under high performance constraints, can make things a little bit slower if you have a lot of connections going on, et cetera. So my recommendation is run your instances on port 1433 always and disable the browser service. A little bit of background history on the browser service? Yes. Question? I think it has to do with backwards compatibility and the fact that so the question was, why does Microsoft do not enforce a disabled browser service? Yes. Right. So the yes, and I was going to mention that in shortly. So the question was, what doesn't Microsoft enforce everybody running on port 1433? It's because not everybody can set up multiple IPs on the same box. That's essentially the reason why. Backwards compatibility, for the most part. But my personal preference, and what I would encourage all of you guys to do, set up multiple IP addresses on your boxes. It's easier that way, actually, because you can have multiple DNS names for each instance and then manage those accordingly. You can see me offline and we can talk more about this. That's my preferred method of doing setup. And the reason why the SQL Server browser service exists as a separate entity is because of the Slammer virus. If you remember the Slammer virus back in, what was that, 2003? Yeah? When Slammer hit, the SQL Server browser service feature was built in, it was baked into SQL Server.exe. So it was part of the engine. One of the things that happened with SQL Server 2005 was that what got split as a different service. So if you have a SQL Server 2000 instance, the browser service still runs on the same memory process as SQL Server. So the database engine and the browser functionality, it's all baked into the same executable. That's a little bit of history or trivia for you guys. Any questions about this? I know I went on a huge tangent about TCP ports and all that, but I kind of want to stress that point because you want to make your lives a lot easier. I've noticed that companies struggle when they have all these instances running on different ports. And now some of you might be saying, might be thinking, well, wait a second. Aren't we supposed to sort of hide the instance for security purposes? We want to make it not that easy for everybody, for anybody to learn. I think that's 90s mentality, so to speak. Nowadays, you can run a port scanner against your server, and it will take just a couple minutes to figure out which port SQL Server runs under. So if I am a malicious person and I want to cause damage to your server, I want to know which port SQL Server is running under, it's going to take me just a couple of minutes to figure that out. So security by obscurity, not a huge thing for me nowadays. Right? Make sense? So let's continue on, and I promise we'll get rid of this slide shortly. Security mode equals SQL. That means whether you can select SQL authentication or just only Windows authentication. My preferred method, Windows authentication only. Why is that? Can anybody tell me why? Passwords sent across the network. When you use Windows authentication, use Kerberos. Kerberos does not transmit passwords on the wire. And if you use SQL authentication, or SQL logins, your password will be, although it will be encrypted on the packet, it's actually sent across the network. Somebody could take that packet, run it through some decryption program in the cloud, and it'll take about 20 minutes to figure out what the password is. Okay? Well, not 20 minutes, it'll take considerably longer than that, but that's my point, right? If anybody needed, if anybody was sniffing your network, trying to figure out what your passwords are, that could potentially reach that information. Right? So my huge suggestion, if you don't have an actual need to leverage SQL logins, go with Windows authentication whenever possible. Right, so if we specified security mode equals SQL here, we have to specify an NSA password. That only makes sense, right? Because we're saying we're actually going to leverage SQL logins, hence we have to specify an NSA password. And this, that password is something that I picked for the sake of the example. The next parameter is SQL service startup type. I don't know about you guys, but I like my instances to run automatically when I reboot my server, right? Now, you might not want this on every single instance. You might want it to be manual, especially if you're working with cluster nodes. So if you're adding a new node to a cluster, yes, Tom.
So I love the password.
Yes. Correct.
What would you recommend them to do besides just using Windows
Authentication? Yes. So what we would recommend in that case, what you're mentioning, is set up the instance as Windows Authentication and then switch through some other script and pass a new or do it manually and set up the SSH password that way. That's a great point. So Thomas LaRocque here is calling me out on the fact that I have a password on clear text on my script. Absolutely true, 100% true. I shouldn't be doing this. So one way that you can sort of be a little bit more secure about your setup scripts, so do not set up SQL logins, so go Windows Authentication only, and then once you're fully set up, complete your instance is now up, you can go in and modify that, all right, as part of your instance setup scripts afterwards. You can do that part manually. There's actually ways to secure credentials using PowerShell, so you might want to look that up on the internet. There's ways to encrypt files with passwords and then read them up just as you need them on a particular script. So you could do that as well. It's an advanced topic, though. Next up, TCP enabled equals one. Well, I was mentioning the SQL Server startup type, right? That, is everybody clear on that one? You want your instance to start up right away, right? Unless you're running a cluster, in which case you want to let the cluster service manage the state of your services, correct? TCP enabled equals one. I think that makes sense, right? If you want to be able to actually connect to our servers once they're actually set up, if you don't do this, you will not be able to leverage TCP IP on your instance. So you have to specify TCP enabled equals one. And the last parameter, which is the most beautiful of all the parameters, says, I accept SQL Server license terms. And that's actually something that was placed there by the legal and compliance affairs team at Microsoft. So yeah, it's only for legal reasons that it is there. Things you should know when setting up a new SQL Server instance or server core. First of all, you want to install .NET 3.5 SP1 manually. There's the command line to do so. You will use dism.exe, right? So the servicing manager for Windows. I hope you guys are comfortable with dism. If you're not, then really all you have to do is run that command. The slides obviously will be available to you guys after this. You might be okay, and this is actually a huge caveat I want to make here. You might be okay with disabling the Windows firewall. I personally like hardware firewalls as opposed to the Windows firewall running on the server. Windows firewall does take resources away from your from SQL Server and anything else that's running on your server. Whether that makes your box more secure or not, it's up for discussion. So my recommendation is that if you don't need it and if you have hardware firewalls placed in front of your SQL servers and between all your other servers and your SQL server, then leverage that as opposed to leveraging the advanced firewall. If you wanted to indeed disable the Windows firewall, that's the command that you can run. There's some PowerShell version of it that you can run as well. If you do need to use the Windows firewall, then you can leverage this NetSH script set of NetSH invocations created by Danny Wine, a SQL Server MCM. And on that URL, you can get that full set of scripts, or you can copy them straight from this slide. Now, this has additional ports that you will need to open, like the DAC, the Dedicated Administrator Connection, mirroring endpoint. So if you're actually leveraging mirroring, there will be additional TCP IP ports that you'll have to open on your firewall. T-SQL debugger, so if you have dev or test boxes, you will need to open additional ports as well. Browser for the engine and browser for analysis services, et cetera. Any questions about this? Things you should know. Clusters and availability groups just work. There's no issue with running them on server core. No issues whatsoever. I actually set up, as part of the demos that I'm going to show you, I set up a full-blown AG setup. I had one availability group, one database, three boxes involved in that topology. Two are running full GUI, and the third one is running server core. I run zero scripts for it, zero. I set up my server core box using sconfig, which is something that I will demo to you guys. And after that, I did all my management remotely. I added the node to the cluster, and I created the AG all remotely. I added a new replica on the new box all remotely. I had to run zero scripts, literally zero scripts. So this is the thing that I'm trying to stress with this presentation, is that you do not need to conquer the command line to be server core aware or be leveraging server core all the way. Right. So let's do demos. I'm gonna switch here to my laptop. And I'm not sure that nobody's seeing anything. Just make sure that we have a secondary. The comment is that it does not have a GUI. Yes, I agree. It does not. Extend. I wasn't doing extend. Why my laptop was playing tricks on me. There we go. It should be coming up shortly. There we go. Let me just check my screen resolution on my secondary. It's good. And I will show you Hyper-V Manager. This is Hyper-V Manager running on my laptop. I have 8 virtual machines running on my laptop right now. I have 24 gigs of RAM. But I'm nowhere near using those 24 gigs of RAM. Why? Because I'm using dynamic memory on Hyper-V. I have a domain controller. Can everybody see this, by the way? Is it not too small? Good. DC01, that'll be my domain controller. SQL 11 A, B, and C are part of the availability group setup that I was mentioning to you guys before. I will demo that in a second. SQL 11 D is my Windows Server 2008 R2 core installation. SQL 11E is my Windows Server 2012 core installation. This is my admin box. This is the box that I want you guys to all have on your data centers. The one box that you would use to manage them all. Okay? This is a VM, doesn't matter for this demo. And this is a Minchell VM. So I'm going to go ahead and show you guys Windows Server 2008 R2 core running on Windows Server 2008. Can everybody see that? I'm going to log in here. Oops. And this is, remember, this is Windows Server 2008 R2 core. It's not Windows Server 2012. And that is taking a little bit of time to log in. While it does that, I will show you the other box that I do have here, Windows Server 2012 core. Now, that's server core. You had seen that screenshot before, right? There are actually things that still run. This is pure server core. It's not Minshell. There are things that are graphical that still run here, like Notepad. Very handy. So you see it's not all 100% server core. You still have some graphics support. So you can, yes, you can run Notepad. There's other things that run. I'm not going to go through those. Pardon me? Minesweeper. Minesweeper, I believe it is not supported in server core, sir. Although, yeah, I do regret that fact as well. Sconfig is a utility that I was mentioning to you that I use to set up my basic configuration settings on my box. And this is will probably be your best friend when setting up your server core instances. You use it once, you will probably never again have to log on to that server core box. You will use this to do things like, well, you can see that. Set up the domain, change your computer name, configure remote management. Windows update settings, change all from that, or you can use the GPO for that. Download and install updates. You can also leverage your WSOS servers or whatever you prefer to do there. Remote desktop, you can enable or disable there. Network settings, there's where you would change your IP address, et cetera, date and time, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to go through all of those options. I just wanted to show you folks sconfig. Now my Windows Server 2008 R2 core instance finally logged on. It took a little bit of time there. The one thing that I wanted to highlight is the difference in the color of the background. If you notice that, this is server core in 2012. It's black background. And this has got the, whatever that name of the color is, 2008 R2. So you can easily tell what operating system you're running unless you change it manually. OK? I'm not going to demo too much Windows Server 2008 R2 core, because obviously you should be highly recommended that you run Windows Server 2012 core. So moving on the demo, I wanted to show you Minchell, and I want to drag the window in just a second. This is Minchell, right? OK, it's a gray. It's not blue. We log on, and look what happens. I log on. It looks like server core, but boop, right away, I got server manager. Did you notice that? I logged in, and server manager just kicked in immediately. I can, like as in any other server, you are able to disable server manager from running automatically when you log on. Okay, so you can easily disable that setting. That's Minchell for you. So server manager and Minchell. Server manager is not available on server core, which makes perfect sense, right? We want to leverage server core from some other server to manage our server core instances. I want to show you now how I can do things that are not quite supported on server core, like services.msc. On the Minshell, this is supported 100%, no issues. So Minshell is actually very friendly, very administrative friendly. If you're not ready to go all the way to server core, I encourage you to at least go Minshell. It's a good idea. Remember, like I said, you can switch from server core to Minshell to full GUI, no issues, until you install SQL Server. Once you get there, you cannot switch anymore. All right, let's continue the demo. And here I'm going to show you how I can, from this administration box, which I'm about to log on to, I am going to show you how do we add a remote server to manage it. Just like you would with any other server, server manager, you can go to all servers. And you go here to manage, add servers. We can add a remote server there. Can see a screen? Oops. Sorry. My bad. So this is server manager. This is my administration box. Right? I'm just running server manager here. Because of the resolution. So bear with me for just a second. I pull that back, place it back in. There we go. Resolution is just too low. So that's the local box, SQL 11F. Can everybody see that OK? You can go to Manage, Add Servers, and add whatever other box you want to manage here. So in our case, we'll select SQL 11E. Hit Find Now. Finds the box. Double-click it. Say OK. And you're now managing the box. Takes a little bit of time to register it, et cetera, and then you can actually manage it. From here, in this box, let me just make this point clear. On the admin box, I have the SQL Server management tools installed. OK, so I have SSMS installed in this box. Right? I have no instances of SQL Server running on this box, though. All my other my instances are running on my server core instances. Now, I can actually say, right click. I can RDP to that server if I wanted to. I do computer management. I can do PowerShell, remote PowerShell. And I can configure all the things from here. You can start a performance counter if you wanted to, et cetera. You can add roles and features, which is key. In the example of the AG, which I'm going to show you further, one of the things I did is that I right-clicked, and the first feature that I added was failover clustering to make the availability group work. So from here, I can click on computer management. And I can go services and applications and look what's here. Pardon me. SQL Server Configuration Manager. It's available as a separate application when you're managing your local instance. But when you're managing a remote instance, you can find it very easily in Computer Manager. Okay? So you can use this to change things like, for example, your SQL Server service account. That makes sense? Easy. No scripts, right? It's the same exact interface that you're used to. You just find it, you just have to a couple more clicks to get to it. I think this is easy. And I can see all the states of all my services here from my remote box. I can do anything I want with them. I can restart them, et cetera. No problem. Right? I can still look at my network configuration and my client configuration, et cetera. If I want to create aliases on the local box, if I wanted to, I can do so. No problem. And since this is a management box, I actually have, Windows updates, that can mean for updates. If I want to launch SSMS, I just go SQL Server Management Studio, because I do have SQL Server Management tools here in this box installed. And I can log into that box remotely, just like you would from any other box. So you see, I have a server core box, but I have run zero scripts to deal with it. I can do anything I want remotely. Okay, folks? Any questions about this? Yes. I believe you do have to be an administrator because you'll be touching things like service accounts and things like that require admin privileges. Yes. But before you continue on, you might be thinking, I don't have local administrator privileges on my SQL Server boxes. Well, I suggest that you talk to your system administrators about getting being delegated administration only on your SQL Server boxes, so you can at least perform these tasks, okay? Now, you might be able to get away with not being a full-blown administrator, but there's a ton of permissions that you have to grant to your account in order to be able to manage this. So it might be just easier to go administrator. I understand that in some environments, you might not be able to. But again, these are tasks that you shouldn't be performing that often. SQL Server Configuration Manager is not something that you'll be launching every day. SSMS would. So hopefully in your environment, compliance and regulations will allow you to do this. Any questions thus far? Yes, sir.
The biggest thing I see that Core doesn't support for SQL is the reporting services aspect.
Yep.
Is there any possible way that if you were to set up SQL and all of a sudden the application is connecting to it requires that reporting service, is there any way to extend that to a full blown GUI, or is that falls through for once you install SQL you can no longer change it even going upward?
I'm pretty positive that you have to uninstall SQL before you actually switch the Windows mode in order to install SSRS, unfortunately, yes. But then again, you have to remember what we talked about at the beginning. You don't want SSRS running on the same box as SQL Server. Whenever possible, you want to split that into another box, because you can definitely do that.
Yeah.
You can have SSRS running on its own set. You can actually have an entire farm of SSRS servers looking at the same metadata, the same catalog for the reports. Mm-hmm. And then from those can access any instances. You don't even have to have the data that you report off of on the same instance that your metadata is. You can have those completely separate. That's the way that you scale this SSRS. Okay. Any other questions? Did everybody get that? The question was if you had an instance and you needed to install something, say you went server core and installed the database engine, and all of a sudden you want to install SSRS, how do you do that? Well, I believe you have to, unfortunately, you have to uninstall SQL, change the Windows mode, then set up SQL again and install SSRS. But my point was, you don't want to do that anyway. You want to have a separate instance running SSRS connecting to that database engine. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. Let's continue on. I want to finish the demo, and we have quite some time. And we're going to move forward with the availability groups demo. There's actually not a whole lot that I want to mention here. I just wanted to highlight the fact that I have three boxes here. Box number one, full GUI installation of SQL, of Windows. So there it is, it's a full GUI installation. You can easily tell by the Windows Server 2012 logo and the recycle bin. It's there. And SQL 11c, which I'm about to show you in just a second, will be the other virtual machine that's actually involved in this availability group. I can actually not pronounce availability group today. There we go. So this is a server core installation, as you can see. The blue screen gave it away, didn't it? Right. Now, from my management box, my SQL 11F box, I can actually connect to SQL 11A, and I can see what's going on that server. I logged on to, essentially, I logged on to SQL 11A to show you that it was a full-blown GUI installation. And you see a database here called test that is synchronized. If you go to always on availability groups here, everybody see this, by the way? Yeah. You can see that I have my availability group called SQL AG, and I have availability replicas. I have three servers involved, SQL 11A and B, both full GUI installations. And I just showed you SQL 11C, which was a server core install. I'm managing it from here. It's part of the AG. I can actually delete it and add it back. Not a problem. To do this setup, guess how many scripts I ran?
Zero.
Yes, Tom, you nailed it. Exactly. You do not need to do anything on the command line to manage a server core instance. All right, any comments? How do you check your disk with server cores running low? You probably want to run a PowerShell script to do so. Disk management will help you, but you cannot actually browse the folders graphically. That's the only thing. So the question was, if my server core instance is running low on space, what do I do? Well, dynamic disks will hopefully help you on the OS front. And on the SQL Server front, you want to establish a set. I want to reserve all the disk up front because of performance concerns. But it's a much better idea to generate your own set of PowerShell scripts to figure out what the worst offenders are in terms of disk space. There's actually several scripts out on the internet. There is a code repository called poshcode.org that you might have heard of. It has a ton of PowerShell scripts ready for you to just copy and paste and use them. I highly recommend that you look into that. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
In the SQL Server installation, if I'm installing on four, does Microsoft recommend different settings for how much memory it allocates to the SQL Server and to the operating system?
That is a great question. So the question is, if I am setting up SQL Server on a Windows Server Core instance, is there a change in the recommendation of how much memory to leave for the OS now that you don't have as many GUI components? In my opinion, no. You should still leave plenty of memory for the OS to manage anything it needs to do at the kernel level without interfering with SQL Server. That fair answer? I believe it's best to let Windows do its thing and not prevent it from ever doing it. Now, on the other hand, I will recommend that you lock pages in memory so that Windows will not swap SQL Server away to disk. But that's a completely different conversation. Yes, over here. The question was whether if I had a link with recommendations for different max server memory settings for a SQL Server instance with different sizes of RAM. I don't have one handy, but if you see me offline, I'll help you find one. I'm sure there's plenty out on the internet. Tom? Tom can help you find it. He probably has something available for you. There was another question over here, and then I'll go right back to you. Yes, sir. Clustering of physical hosts, not an issue, not a problem whatsoever. Oh, my entire lab is VMs, but they don't need to be. This whole could have been physical servers, RDPing to. Absolutely, completely supported. There's no issue whatsoever. So the question was whether you can do server core on physical servers. Absolutely, highly recommend it. In clusters as well, sure. Clusters, availability groups, everything works. There is no restrictions in that regard. You had a question, and then I'll go right back with you.
I just follow up with this question. Is there anything wrong with just allowing people to use as much memory as possible? That's the only function.
No, I actually recommend that. But on the other hand, you got to leave some room for Windows to breathe. You know, Windows would actually perform a multitude of operations underneath the hood. You have to remember, SQL relies on Windows. It does everything through Windows calls. So you got to let some room for Windows to breathe. But yes, I absolutely recommend that you go as much memory as possible for your SQL Server, giving Windows its fair share so it can do its thing. Yes, sir, you had a question in the back? So what kind of monitoring can you do on server core? Is that your question? Perfmon works. I'm sorry, I don't understand your question. Like SCOM? Yeah, you can monitor server core instances with SCOM. The agent, I believe the agent is supported in server core as well. It has to be an unattended install of the agent, though. But I believe it's fully supported. Don't quote me on it, but I'll help you find an actual answer to it. I'm 99.9% positive that it's supported. Can anybody help me with that question? Yeah. Anybody using? It is supported? There you go. So, yes, it is supported. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Anybody else? Questions? Right. Windows High Performance Edition, is that a high power computing? So I'm not sure. You know, we'll have to see me offline or shoot me an email and I'll help you figure that out. All right. And it's four here. So that was a Q&A. I have about 8 minutes left. For more information, these are, oops, sorry, I didn't switch here. I should have. For more information on server core topics, I highly recommend that you watch the video for the TechEd 2012 presentation given by SQL Server MVP Alan Hurd on using Windows Server, SQL Server 2012 on server core. That's the URL. You can copy it right now, or you can wait to download the deck for this presentation. There's a great wiki on configuring server core. Configure SQL Server and Server Core. That's the URL as well. And there's also configuring always on with SQL Server PowerShell. If you haven't ventured set up an availability group with PowerShell, you can do so leveraging that one blog post and MSDN blocks. Related content, we have more presentations that are related to Server Core or touch on Server Core on anyway. Windows Server 2012 Deployment and Ongoing Management, why Server Core is right for you. Installing Microsoft SQL Server 2012 on Windows 2012 Server Core. And there's actually an example. So installing Microsoft SQL Server 2012 on Windows 2012 Server Core is actually a hands-on lab. That's something that you can go do right now. So if you go to hands-on labs area, you can go through it. It's DBI H208. Highly recommended that you do that. If you're interested getting certified, the exam that touches upon Server Core, it's exam 70-410. And if you need to speak to me, you can see me right outside after the presentation. You can shoot me an email. My email address is argenis@gmail.com. Just my first name, argenis, argenis@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter. My handle is @dbargenis, so dbargenis. It's a play on DBA. You can find me later at the Ask the Experts booth tomorrow from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. And I will also be on the Mission Critical Data Platform booth on the Microsoft Expo down at the hall. Right. So those were the track resources. Some more resources for you folks. Channel 9, Microsoft Learning, TechNet, and MSDN. Have the link to those. And if you complete an evaluation for this talk, you will be entered to win very nice prizes. So could you please submit an evaluation of my talk? That helps me as a speaker. There's the QR code. If you want to scan that right now, you can. You can enter an evaluation right away from your mobile phones. And you're immediately entered to win. That concludes the presentation. Thank you very much for attending. If you have any other questions or just want to have general comments, please see me outside. Thanks, everyone.